This is Catherine, host of Heart of Mind Radio, and I am so grateful to be with you here today.
And I have a very special program scheduled for you today. We're going to be speaking with Master Charles Cannon, and he is the author of a book called Forgiving the Unforgivable, the true story of how survivors of the Mumbai terrorist attack answered hatred with compassion. And this particular book has a foreword by Eckhart Tolle. And it really is an interesting story because it's more than just about the attack. The author, Master Charles Cannon, happened to be in the hotel in Mumbai with 25 people on a spiritual retreat. And he is a spiritual leader. And the book talks about how they used their spiritual tools, their practices to survive the situation and how to get through it and then be able to face it with compassion rather than with a hatred. It's an interesting story, and it gives us tools on how we can live our lives through the greatest controversy, and it sort of explains what all these spiritual tools are for, you know, the meditation, the forgiving, the understanding. You know, it's kind of easy to do when the sun is shining and there are no holes in your path or nothing to trip upon. But when you're in an environment or in a situation that is horrific, do these tools really work? And how can we make them work for us? And that's the lesson being taught in this story, Forgiving the Unforgivable. We'll be back in a moment. I wanted to share some music with you. We're going to hear a few more pieces, one by Sinead O'Connor and another by Don Corio. So stay tuned.
Show.
Welcome back. You're listening to Heart of Mind, and I want to introduce my guest for this afternoon, but first by giving you a bit of history about the book we're going to be speaking, Forgiving the Unforgivable, The Power of Holistic Living. In November of 2008, Pakistani Muslim terrorists attacked Mumbai. One of their targets, the five-star Oberoi Hotel, was where our guest, Master Charles Cannon, leader of the Synchronicity Foundation for Modern Spirituality in Virginia, and 24 of his international associates were staying. During the ensuing 45-hour siege, four in the group were wounded and two were killed. When rescued by SWAT teams and interviewed by the international media, Synchronicity survivors expressed immediate compassion and understanding toward the terrorists, repeating words of forgiveness, not accusation. This ignited a stunned curiosity throughout the world and a deluge of email messages and phone calls. "I am inspired by your response," people wrote. "How did you get to be the way you are? And how can I learn to be that way too?" Forgiving the Unforgivable is the answer to those questions. This book outlines what forgiveness must become in our catastrophic-prone world and how true, deep, and unqualified forgiveness can become instinctive by learning and living what the author describes as the holistic lifestyle. As survivors retell the horrific moments of their ordeal, they also reveal the spiritual beliefs that enabled them to transcend and transform this terrifying experience. Their epic story is destined to become a source of inspiration and strength for millions. And this is what describes the book Forgiving the Unforgivable, The Power of Holistic Living. And I'd like to welcome you, Master Charles Cannon, to WBAI and to the listeners of this program, Heart of Mind. And so I just want to say hello and welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be with you, Kathy.
And what I would like to do, before telling the story of the book itself, if you could give a little bit of information about your work and the Foundation for Modern Spirituality, Synchronicity Foundation for Modern Spirituality, to explain people what this is and give a little sense of your own history, because you have, it seems, a full life, 30 years or more, of being a spiritual master, and I'd like to let people have a sense of who you are.
Very good. My own spiritual journey began when I was 3 years old with apparitional manifestation of the Blessed Mother. I was raised in a Catholic family, and that experience began to unfold at that very early age and has continued throughout my life up to the present. I journeyed, so to speak, out of organized religion into comparative religion and philosophy in my educational years, and then in my early 20s, I met my teacher, who was an Indian guru, very well known and acknowledged at the time, Paramahansa Muktananda, who many know in the West, and I became one of his closest Western disciples for the last 12 years of his life. he educated me under his thumb in the classical orthodox roots of what are called holistic models of reality or holistic philosophical systems and ways of life, and asked me that after he died, I should return to the West and find a way to modernize and update and westernize these ancient and time-honored philosophies of life. And so I did that in 1983 after his death and settled here in Virginia and created Synchronicity Foundation for Modern Spirituality, which is a not-for-profit religious educational organization. And over the last 30 years, I have done what I was asked to do by my teacher, and that is modernize and westernize the holistic model of reality and the holistic lifestyle, and translate it into modern idioms in ways that Western people can more easily relate to it and apply it in their lives so that they can have a modern spiritual experience and enjoy the benefits of a holistic lifestyle. And a holistic lifestyle is really a lifestyle based on the principle of balance, and through the maintenance of balance in all aspects of your life, you are able to live more wakefully or consciously, and therefore have a more truthful perception of reality, which is what synchronicity, modern spirituality is all about.
Mm-hmm. In your book, you speak about your perception of the world and how you perceive the world as sort of this dancing energy in all its different manifestations. I was wondering if you can speak to that.
What I speak to is my own state of being, and perhaps I should preface this with a reference from the Veda and the Tantra, the oldest of holistic philosophical models of reality in human experience, and how they define the true nature of reality. And they define the true nature of reality as one blissful consciousness, that life or consciousness or existence itself is a self-delighting, joyous energy, and that if we are truly experiencing reality, our experience would be just that, blissful consciousness. And so my experience over many years of living this lifestyle, which has as its basis meditation, as the foremost balancing technique in human history, the result of many years of practice is a substantiation in holistic states of being, and that can best be described as a wakefulness, a super consciousness within the here and now of the happening of life, or the here and now of our existence, or what in the classical traditions has been referred to as the eternal now of true reality. And within that wakeful reality, everything is fluid. Nothing is really solid. You can see and perceive the essence of one life, of one vibrating, moving, fluid consciousness that, again, is the essence of all and everything, and the very movement of this energy, the very vibration of the energy of life is joyous. It is self-delighting. It is blissful, and so it fills you with bliss, and you experience this constant high of life, as if you were given an opiating drug, and yet it is just the natural experience of life consciously lived, life holistically lived. And it is this experience that I was referencing in the book.
Mm-hmm. And I think for many people, I would even say including myself, I've understood and have meditated for a good number of years, and I've maybe achieved blissful states fleetingly, but I have no concept of living in that state. And also, as the book describes, it's hard for me to understand how one would maintain that through such a terrible incident. And that's really the power of your book, Forgiving the Unforgivable, because it goes through the stories of the different people who were there with you and what they went through. And as you, and then you weave through all of the actual experience, you know, like the five core principles of the holistic model. And, you know, so you're weaving in the principles in with the story. So it's kind of a reading experience. So I would love for you to tell people about how it is that I believe it was 25 people plus yourself who were there in Mumbai. How did they access this power of holistic living, and what does that really mean? Can you explain that to our listeners?
Yes, an excellent question, Kathy. The holistic lifestyle is what is prescribed within the holistic models of reality within all the great wisdom traditions. And the holistic lifestyle is a lifestyle based on the principle of balance. It says that we live within a relative reality and that wholeness is proportional to balance within our multidimensional consciousness. So at each level of our multidimensional consciousness, the physical, the emotional, the mental, and then the subtler levels of dimensional consciousness, we have to create balance. And this is easy to understand in terms of perhaps the physical dimension. How do we create balance in the physical dimension? Well, it obviously has to do with what we eat, our diet. It has to do with exercise, how we move our energy at the physical level, and how we can bring those relative polarities, the positive and the negative, into a state of balance. And we can do the same with our emotional dimension, our feelings in terms of life negative or life positive feelings, and we can do the same in terms of our minds with our life negative and life positive thoughts and beliefs. So if we live consciously with a focus on balance in this foundation of our multidimensional consciousness, and we meditate daily, which is a balancing technique, then over time we will develop constancy in the state of balance. And proportional to the state of balance, remember, is the holistic experience of consciousness, or the holistic awareness, which is experienced as a wakefulness, a witnessing consciousness, simply watching the happenings of itself as life, moment by moment by moment. So the people who were with me in Mumbai were students of mine for many, many years and had practiced this holistic lifestyle and were long-term meditators. And so within any experience of their life, they are living very wakefully. They have developed a level of constancy in terms of balance and holistic experience of reality. And so when the terrorist experience happened, or they found themselves within that situation, they were able to maintain that balanced state of being based on years and years and years of practice. You know, my teacher used to say to us many, many years ago when we were all students in his ashram in India, he'd say to us, you know, it's easy to meditate in an ashram. You know, it's easy to meditate in a quiet and safe place. But eventually in your life, the tests will come, and you will get to see the benefit of your meditation or the fruit of your meditation. And so the terrorist experience was one of those tests. Life tests you. It presents all kinds of challenges, but it's not so much what happens to you, but how you respond to it that really matters. And there you get to see who you really are and what your experience of life is really all about.
So with that being said, can you also speak to some of the people's particular journeys? I mean, I found it interesting that there was synchronicity in some of these stories, like the woman whose husband and daughter went, and then afterwards she got like a little message in a fortune cookie that said, you know, your luck has changed forever. And then there were other people who somehow, as they were going through this experience, their perception seemed to be somewhat surreal and sort of floating above it rather than just completely absorbed by the terror of it. And I'm wondering if you could somehow convey that to our listeners.
And what you are referencing and what they were describing in their experience is the state of witness consciousness. This is one of the foremost tenets of the holistic models of reality, which says that who are you really? You are the witness of the mind. You are the one who is always watching. The one who is aware of your body, the one who is aware of your feelings, the one who is aware of your thoughts and beliefs and stories about who you are and what life is, the one who watches when you sleep and reports your dreams to you when you awaken. So witness consciousness is regarded as the substratum, the ground of being, of human consciousness, and to develop a consistent experience of witness consciousness is what I refer to as wakefulness. You are not merely aware of your physical, mental, and emotional dimensions. You are also aware at subtler levels of your consciousness. And in that interaction between the denser levels, physical, emotional, and mental, and the subtler levels, subtle, causal, and supercausal, there is the creation of your experience, or what in quantum mechanics is defined as the downward causation, that you are actually interacting with universal consciousness through your subtle dimensions and downloading from the all possibility of universal consciousness the experience that is self-referential to where your individuated consciousness is in its progressive evolution. And so if you are wakeful within a state of witness consciousness, you are aware and you perceive insights downloading that are pertinent to the experience that is happening. And that's what these people were describing and what we all experienced within in the midst of this terrorist attack, which is usually an experience where you get immobilized in fear and you are mostly reaching outside of yourself for information that is necessary to your survival. And you get immobilized within that experience. We were rather remaining balanced and not only focused on the external situations, but also on the interior of our being and maintaining the balance that allowed those insights to present themselves, to give us direction or to give us commentary on the experience that was happening and how we could conduct ourselves in terms of the experience that was happening with a focus on saving our lives. And so each of the people that I have referenced in the book describes this in one way or another. For example, there were two of our people on the 18th floor of the hotel that as soon as the terrorist attack happened and the initial bombs and explosions and gunfire took place, they had this insight to get out, to run. And so they left their room, and only with the light of their cell phone were they able to go down smoke-filled stairs, 18 floors, and get out of the hotel. Now, what we learned thereafter, of course, was that the terrorists eventually made their way up to the 18th floor, and the room right next to these two women's room was the room that the terrorists had had and stockpiled all their weapons in. They took everybody on the 18th floor hostage, and they killed 40 of them.
Wow.
Listen more often to things than to deeds. Listen more often to things than to deeds. 'Tis the ancestor's bird when the fire's voice is heard. 'Tis the ancestor's bird in the voice of the waters. Those who have died have never lived. The dead are not under the earth. They are in the rustling trees. They are in the groaning woods. They are in the crying grass. They are in the moaning rocks. The dead are not under the earth. So listen more often to things than to deeds. Listen more often to things than to deeds. 'Tis the ancestor's breath when the fire's voice is heard. 'Tis the ancestor's breath in the voice of the waters. Those who have died have never lived. The dead have a pact with the living. They are in the woman's breast. They are in the wailing child. They are with us in the home. They are with us in the crowd. The dead have a pact with the living. So listen more often to things than to deeds. Listen more often to things than to deeds. 'Tis the ancestor's word when the fire's voice is heard. 'Tis the ancestor's word in the voice of the water. Listen more often to things than to deeds. Listen more often to things than to deeds.
And we're back. You're listening to Heart of Mind over WBAI Radio, and I'm Kathy Davis. My guest is Master Charles Cannon, the author of Forgiving the Unforgivable, The Power of Holistic Living, the true story of how survivors of the Mumbai terrorist attack answered hatred with compassion. And I want to welcome you back, Master Charles Cannon. And this is a really remarkable insight that certainly you're giving to our listeners, because it seems we're living in an age of fear, and where people compound their hurts by turning to hatred in response to that, and also by reacting to situations with so much fear that they don't know which way to turn, don't know what to do. And so what you're providing is some real insight on how we can be more fully human, more fully who we are, and have that ability to connect to a part of ourselves that is connected to, I don't know how we would, I would call it the all spirit, the all creator. Is that really what we're saying?
Exactly. How can we connect to the source of our being, the source of all and everything, that substratum, that essence, that ground of being that we all share? To me, the easiest way to relate to that is to make it really practical and to refer to it as life. What is the ground of our being? What is the commonality we all share? We all share life. Without it, we have nothing. With it, all experience is possible. And so we have to perhaps evolve our value for the life that we all share. And if we can make it our ultimate value, if we can honor life as sacred, then perhaps we can begin to find our oneness, our unity within our diversity. Of course, we live in a relative reality, and it has two polarities, the positive and the negative, and the negative is that fear-based dominant polarity. And yet we can also understand that through the principle of balance, we can experience a fuller, a more whole experience of ourselves, and that is simply by bringing greater emphasis to the opposite polarity. What's the opposite of fear? Love. If love is too much of a reach for you, then perhaps look at compassion, or look at kindness, or look at peace. And that was our response with regard to the terrorists when we were interviewed by the international media, and they wanted to know, did we want revenge? You know, were we angry? And our experience and our perspective was this. Everyone presents to you a possible experience that you could have, but it is their experience. You can honor it and say, I honor it, it's your experience. I don't understand it, but it's valid, it's your experience. But it places me at choice. I can either choose the experience that you're demonstrating and fill myself with, in the case of the terrorists, hatred and fear and anger and violence, and that will be my contribution to the world. Or I can say, no, I honor that for you, but I'm rather going to choose love, compassion, kindness, peace, forgiveness, gratitude. I'm going to fill myself with this experience, and this will be my contribution to the world. And I think what's always important is that we're always at choice. Who do we choose to be? Based on our choices is the experience we have, and based on all of our choices is the world we have.
Mm. So what you're speaking of now in terms of the choice, in terms of the polarity, is this part of the, in your book you have a chapter on the seeds of transformation in which you talk about involution and evolution. Does this lead to that?
Yes. Involution and evolution are the relative cycles of consciousness, again, as delineated in most holistic models of reality. And when we relate that to human experience, we can look at these two polarities as cycles within our life experience. And perhaps the first third, or in some cases the first half of life, is characterized by the involutionary cycle in consciousness, and that is the experience of what it is not. Now, why would consciousness want to experience what it is not? And the answer to that is because all experience is relative. You cannot experience what you are except in relation to what you are not. So we all move through this involutionary cycle in human consciousness where we must invest in illusion and experience what we are not. Since all and everything in truth is one life, one consciousness, the only way we can experience what we are not is through fantasy, is through pretense, through illusion. So we pretend that we are separate and different from each other. We separate the relative polarities. I am a subject separate and different from all objects that I encounter. I create conflict between myself and the illusory other, and the result of my conflict is suffering. When I am full in the experience of what I am not, when I have suffered enough, I awaken. I reach that change point between involution and evolution, and I awaken to the truth of who I am. I see through the illusion, and that initiates the opposite cycle, the evolutionary cycle, where the emphasis increasingly is upon the experience of who I truly am. As I dismantle all of the illusory experience of what I am not, so I relinquish separation and illusory duality, and progressively I experience unification in my consciousness and open to the experience of the oneness of all and everything. So this is sort of a philosophical representation of the human journey as referenced in these time-honored holistic models of reality and philosophies of life, and yet they are very applicable and practical when we bring our awareness to them and bring our focus to them and see how these principles are operative in our life experience. You know, they will, I'm sure you have heard it said that we didn't get an instruction manual. We're born. And yet there are instruction manuals, and these holistic models of reality can serve that purpose and serve it very well and assist us in mastering what it is to be human, which for me is why we're really here.
Well, I love the concept of mastering what it is to be human. And I think a lot of the listeners are very much wanting to follow that path or to understand that. Can you give some advice or some pointers on what people could be doing to get from where they are to come closer to the place that you're speaking of being in this holistic living? And I think that a lot of people understand the principles of right diet and exercise, but they don't quite as well understand the level of conscious awareness that you're talking about and how to actually live in that state. You know, how do we get from here to there?
Most important in terms of holistic lifestyle is understanding the principle of balance, and that you must bring balance to all aspects of your multidimensional consciousness. Now, the foremost balancing technique is meditation, because what happens when you meditate? You sit quietly, you close your eyes, and you turn your gaze inward. Well, the interior of your being is the non-dominant relative polarity. For the most part, our eyes are open, and we are engaged with the objective external world around us, and we get imbalanced to that polarity. So meditation's a natural balancing technique, and if you sit to meditate for a half hour or an hour a day, you are working the muscle of balance. And if you do that every day, you develop strength in that muscle. You develop constancy in the experience of balance. So the foremost balancing technique is meditation. And we all know in the West the benefits of meditation, even through our own medical system and the recommendations for stress reduction. But just as a balancing practice that is essential to our wholeness, meditation for me is number one. I looked at many years ago ways to modernize meditation, because I found that for Westerners, this was very challenging. We weren't comfortable sitting cross-legged on the floor, and we didn't understand the context of meditation. It wasn't part of our culture. So I updated it in terms of a more scientific understanding of what happens in the brain when we meditate. And we can look at the same relative reality in terms of the two sides, the right and the left hemispheres of the human brain. We can understand that the left brain dominates the right, the objective dominates the subjective, and we can understand that when we meditate, the two sides of the brain come into balance. We can also understand the brainwave frequencies related to that balanced interaction of the brain. And we can use modern sonic technology to entrain the brain into the meditative brainwave profile or pattern. So we can make meditation very high-tech, very precise, and very efficient, so that anybody can meditate. It doesn't matter what you believe or what you think. Technology and a modern understanding of the brain can assist us to open to the principle of balance and experience it with precision every time we use it. You know, the media has said a lot of things about me over the years, but one of them that I like is he'll never win a Grammy, but he's gone platinum with meditation.
That's good.
And that's my favorite. It's very fulfilling to me that I have assisted thousands and thousands of people to have an authentic experience of meditation and to open to that balancing principle in their lives, and then apply it in all the other ways as well to increase it and to enjoy the outcome of it, which is wholeness and a more truthful, fulfilling, masterful, joyful experience of life.
Mm. And it's not always easy for people to experience that, because we do get caught up into the drama of the, you know, material world and our material relationships and the ups and downs and the resentments and the angers. And, you know, there are so many of these things that people tend to focus on. And I think that meditation itself will help people to draw into that observer that you were speaking of. But I'm wondering if you could also speak to the principles of holistic living so people can have a greater clarity of who they are and who we are as being.
The principles of holistic living, the five principles?
Yes.
Yes. The first of those principles is I am source. I am consciousness. I am life. I create my reality. So first and foremost, I am consciousness. I am source. It's the ground of my being, the essence of all and everything. I am a form of consciousness. I am the power that orchestrates all and everything. If I can open to that truth within myself and be aware of it, then I am standing in my power, and I recognize that I am the creator of my reality. I am the creator of all and everything in 50 billion simultaneous universes. I am also the creator of my individuated consciousness, my human life right here and right now. And I create my experience through my thoughts, my beliefs, my stories about who I am and what life is. I can tell truthful stories. I can tell illusory stories. I can tell lies about who I am and what life is, or I can be truthful. And if I cultivate truthful experience, then I have truthful experience. Since I create my reality, I'm responsible for it. Nobody else is responsible for my experience. I am the creator of it, and by my choices, so I live. And if I don't like my experience, I'm the creator of it. I can change it. If what I'm experiencing isn't true, I discover that I'm lost in illusion, I can change it. And as the power and as the author of my creation, I can set myself free in the experience of the oneness of all and everything of which I am a part. So these are what I call the five principles of holistic living, or the five principles of conscious living. And if they are applied on a daily basis, the transformation in our life experience that results is absolutely radical.
Mm-hmm. I would also like to touch on the experience. I know that some of the people in your group during this experience were actually, they died. Others were injured. But yet, in your book, you talk about life not ending with death. And I'm wondering if you can speak to that, though everything you've said so far kind of leads to that. I would like to speak to it directly.
This would be in the West. An update of the philosophy of reincarnation that is found in most of the ancient wisdom traditions. I like the more quantum mechanical representation of progression. Rather than having a human experience and recognizing that it isn't long enough to journey the evolution of consciousness to its fullness, and then determine that you would obviously have to have many human lives to be able to complete that journey, I'd rather look at it in an updated modern way, which says, wait a minute, now we know that there are at least 50 billion simultaneous universes to this one in which this little planet Earth and our existence upon it is happening. So would consciousness, the consciousness that we are, be so limited that it would keep repeating the same thing and coming back to human experience time and time again? Or would that be kind of egocentric and arrogant from the perspective of human consciousness. Perhaps consciousness has one human experience and then moves on to the possibilities of 50 billion simultaneous universes of form and journey. But what's important in it is that there is progression, and that progression and cumulative experience is also found in quantum science. And it says that only the physical dimension of our multidimensional consciousness dies. Everything else continues as the consciousness that it is. And when you complete with the form, the human form, and you die the body, there's an interaction then between the all possibility of universal consciousness and your individuated consciousness to determine what is the continuation of the journey based on your history to that point. And then you download appropriately and create the next form wherever that might be in 50 billion simultaneous universes. So what's important in it, I think, is progression. And that our experience is cumulative. Nothing is ever lost. All that you have experienced to date in your cellular history and the evolution of your individuated consciousness is delivering to you the experience you are having in this moment. And so we must bless our history. We must celebrate it, and we must be aware that the choices we are making right here and right now are determining our future.
Well, that's a very powerful way of looking at our lives, and I'm really grateful for all that you have to share. And unfortunately, we're reaching the end of our time here together, and I look forward to being able to talk to you again. I think certainly our listeners would enjoy it as much as I would. I'm wondering if, you know, we're talking about all these universes and all these potentials for our existence after death, but what about during life? Don't we have the potential to explore these universes while we're still embodied, maybe through our sleep or through meditative states, to be able to explore many aspects of existence?
Absolutely so. We are a multidimensional form of consciousness, and in meditation and in our sleep time, we can move into the subtlest dimensions of our multidimensional consciousness and experience the simultaneity of relative reality. We can experience all that is no longer embodied in physical form. We can explore the many facets of multidimensional consciousness throughout its 50 billion simultaneous universes. And you find this experience referenced and validated and described in the accounts of great mystics throughout human history. So it's nothing new. Many great masters have written about it. They've talked of their experience about it and shared it. And you can experience it yourself through the meditative art and science and through the modern spiritual experience and the holistic lifestyle.
Beautiful. And we've been speaking with Master Charles Cannon, the author of Forgiving the Unforgivable, The Power of Holistic Living, the true story of how survivors of the Mumbai terrorist attack answered hatred with compassion. And can you tell people how they can get in touch with you if people want to find out more about your work and your teachings and maybe, you know, get more involved in the holistic living?
Yes, thank you very much. They can go to our website, www.synchronicity.org, or they can access it through the book website, forgivingtheunforgivable.com.
Wonderful.
And those two websites will access all of our world, and if you find resonance with what we are sharing and what we are about, you are most welcome.
Well, thank you very much. I so appreciate your taking the time to be with us today, Master Charles Cannon. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. It's absolutely a delight being with you.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye now. Okay, so this has been Heart of Mind.
Daughters and the liquid sun disappearing.